welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. Huh?
Hey, very good.
29th of December.
It's our last show of 2024.
2024 is almost over.
Yep.
Headed into year 15 next year. Holy cow. So, my name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
Well, Bill, how was your week?
Well, it was quite nice. We had a wonderful Christmas, and it's been weather's been a little damp, but that's okay. It's that time of year. We expect that.
We had multiple Christmases.
That's right.
Just admit it. Just kept happening over and over and over. People came, they visited, they went home. New people came, they visited, they went home.
Yep. And then we visited, and we went home.
So I hope you guys had a good time out there. Let's see. You can find all of our shows back 14 and some odd years at wethepeopleradio.us. If you have ideas for programs, if you have ideas for guests, I read the best, Substack yesterday posting, and she's a friend of our guest today, and I tell you what, got to just twist her arm and get her on here. She's really a writer, doesn't really want to do speaking stuff, but I tell you what, her stuff is fantastic. It's that Jennifer Bilek, the same gal that I read about all this transgender stuff back in, I don't know, 2018 or something. She was the one who got me kind of smartened up on it, and she has an amazing article in there. I listed it. For today, what's it called? It was so good, I forgot what it was called, but it was excellent. I know why. Okay, so I'm having a little spaz attack here. I'll stop having a spaz attack. Our guest is Sharon Byrne, and here we go. Here's the article. It was really, I mean, it's really worth discussing. How trans activists, this was another guy, Jonathan Van Meren, how trans activists won the election for Trump. That kind of caught my eye. And then the other one I'll post right after. I saw that too late last night. So Sharon has been with us a few times. She is a nonprofit and government relations expert. Can't have too many of those, because honestly, when it comes to nonprofit and government, we want all the good guys being experts, and the bad guys have been kind of running the show for a while. She's got 2 decades of advocacy leadership experience and brings to WOLF, the Women's Liberation Front, vital community building experience and connections. She currently serves as the president of the Santa Barbara United Nations Association and served as a delegate to the UN Conference on the Status of Women and Women and Gender Equality Forums. She's the author of multiple published articles on women's rights, including an op-ed in The Independent revealing the insidious presence of human trafficking in Santa Barbara. Also serves on the board of the Santa Barbara Women's Health Coalition and has been a vocal advocate for women's reproductive sovereignty. And she has been the executive director of the Women's Liberation Front, or WOLF, since 2023, actually. And you wouldn't think we would have a huge amount in common, but we have a huge amount in common.
We do.
We do have a huge amount in common. Isn't that funny? I'll never forget that one. When Lloyd Beardsmore was like, you should interview my friend Sharon. She's the head of the Women's Liberation Front. I'm all, doesn't really sound like my kind of thing. Sounds kind of scary and militant and like women's libby. And then it was like, oh, I get it. I don't know. It's so funny. I ask people about it all the time. And they always think it's like part of the 1960s bra-burning kind of thing. And I'm like, no. It's much more modern than that.
Un contraire.
Yeah, un contraire. But I won't ball it up by telling people about your organization. I'm going to let you do that, Sharon. I only tell people about Sharon, and then Sharon tells people about the rest.
It is, you know, politics always creates the strangest of bedfellows, eh?
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
We are in that sort of a time when a lot of times there is a lot of chitter-chatter back and forth, particularly between, I would say, populists and conservatives. And radical feminists. And you would, again, not think those three would step into a bar and have anything to say to each other, but they really do. Because a lot of radical feminists are very disturbed over the way that progressive feminism has kind of hijacked the narrative and said, you know, Everybody else, you know, to the front of the queue, women to the back, and we're like, well, wait, what? You know, like, why is this good, right? And so, and of course, we're all bigots now, you know, because we're transphobic, et cetera. And I would laugh at that because I am arachnophobic. I will tell you, if I see a spider, and I've gotten better about it.
That you'll admit to.
You do have some phobic
totally
in there.
Admit to that, right? Absolutely, right? And I'm better now. I go and capture them in a glass and put them outside, you know, and let them go on their merry way. But, you know, normally I have this sort of heaving revulsion at the look of them. And that, you know, phobia is an irrational fear. I am not irrationally afraid, you know, of transgenders. What I am upset about is the way that it creates an absolute direct conflict with women's rights, and it didn't need to do any of that. So that is where the radical feminists show up, and they're also pissed off at progressivism, period. I don't know if you saw it, Aaron, but the Wall Street Journal ran an article a couple days ago basically saying that the era of progressive politics in the United States is now over.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, it's like anything else, right? You give... You know, it's the expression we've had forever, right? Give them enough rope and they'll hang themselves. And I think that's what happened. They sort of thought they could run the tables, you know. We're going to make you do this, and we're going to make you do that, we're going to make you do the other thing. And everybody went, you know what? I think I'm done having you run me around.
Really, well, and it's interesting, and again, it's where you see this sort of mashup between people who normally wouldn't have a lot to say to each other, right? And that is that the first thing that, I guess, turned a lot of people off. And by the way, this is happening globally. It's not just a U.S. phenomenon. But one of the first things that turned people off was this idea that, you know, their job was somehow causing some remote island to sink into the waves, right, with climate change. And they were like, wait, what?
Yeah.
You know, and I need lentils, and I need to ride my bike, and, you know, and why? You know, that some of the climate change policies cease to make any kind of sense. Right, even progressives at some point. The second thing that really has killed it, and you're seeing some evidence of that now in the UK, is identity politics. And I would certainly say that had a huge part of it in the United States, right? That what you see is a lot of populists and a lot of conservatives and again, radical feminists teaming up and saying, you know, this identity politics thing, it went too far. You know, and now it makes no sense. It just makes no sense. So that bothered people. And then the third thing that really bothered people, and again, these are, you can put them in a conservative slot or a MAGA slot or even a radical feminist slot or just, you know, the average person, was unchecked immigration has consequences.
Yeah.
And the people pushing it haven't really been experiencing those consequences, right? And so, so you've seen a lot of it. I've seen it in the UK quite a bit. You know, my family's all UK-based, and of course today Mom and I are, you know, continuing our Christmas tradition with a wholly American, not really, English cottage pie, right? We're making one for my daughter to come over for dinner. But
what exactly is a cottage pie?
Ooh, so you've heard of them, probably a shepherd's pie.
They come with potatoes, is what I'm seeing. The Irish,
exactly.
loves that. That's where we cross over. We're like, what, you put potatoes on your stew? Oh, that's exciting.
Right. So my British mom's in, you know, making one of those for the holiday tradition here. But yeah, you see this is happening in a lot of places, in Canada, Australia, England. You know, Spain has had a go with this earlier this year. The German government just collapsed for similar reasons, right? So Macron's barely got a majority together still in France, similar problem. So kind of what I think is happening globally is what happened here in November, which is, you know, kind of a smash back against progressivism and saying, you have gone too far and you've lost the plot. It's not progress anymore. You've gone regressive now, you know, and we got to go do something else.
Well, when you're holding people accountable, I mean, like we were all told when we were kids, right? You can't blame people for things they can't control. Color, you know, you can't blame someone for what color they were born. They didn't get to choose. And that always made sense. As a kid, not only was it not right to discriminate against people, but, you know, I remember my mom saying, you know, no one can help that. You can't help that. They can't help that. And it's kind of like, oh, yeah, that's a good point. And now we're being blamed. We're all the wrong color. And I think there comes a point where people are like, yeah, you know, you can't blame me for that either. Yeah.
Yes, and unfortunately, not only do they blame you, but it was quite pejorative, right? So, Aaron, you horrible,
that's true.
You know, white, colonizing, you know, woman. I mean, like, it went really in some awful directions. I think there's also across the world, again, we've seen this in the United States, increasingly since George Bush's administration, is a rising authoritarianism. So authoritarianism kind of sucks no matter who's in charge, right? But we all got a good up and close look at progressive authoritarianism. And, you know, it's basically you will, right? You know, you will do these things. You will eat lentils. You will ride bikes. You will, you know, you will let men into women's prisons. You will do these things, and you will believe that they are women. And at that point, you know, I think even, like I say, even the most liberal-minded person would be like, now look, you know, that you went too far. And that's where the feminist, you know, the radical feminist started selling up saying, sorry, could have gone with you on some other things, but men are not women. Cut it out. And at that point, you know, we all went to war. So it's been a very strange ride and a lot of developments. It's been a minute since I've talked to you. There's been quite a few massive developments. Well, I guess, you know, starting with sort of the top ones, right? You know that there was a big case at the Supreme Court, right, in December. And it was Scarametti, the United States versus Scarametti. Did you know about that case?
No. So you'll have to tell us. I'm going to assume that if we did hear about it, I don't know, I slept since then and stuff, and then there was the whole Santa intervention and the travel.
You'd have been into this one. This was the state of Tennessee, and of course the Attorney General is Mrs. Scarametti. You have to defend Tennessee's law. They passed a ban on allowing surgeries and procedures that would, you know, basically butcher a kid into, you know, believing they were the opposite sex. Anybody under 18, those were banned. The United States brought the lawsuit. The Biden administration, you know, and some families brought the lawsuit. So, we weighed in with an amicus brief. And that case was heard in December. And I don't know what the Supreme Court's going to do. I'm hoping they're not going to overturn Tennessee's ban, because I think pretty much everybody that's still normal, sane, and rational would agree that, you know, any kid who's experiencing any kind of problems with puberty should not be immediately rushed off to the butcher shop and have either their breasts cut off and put on testosterone if they're girls, or have their dicks cut off and put on estrogen if they're boys. I think we would all agree that this is not smart. We should not be doing this to our children. So we'll see if the Tennessee ban is upheld. There are other states that have done similar bans, and of course you could see, you know, perhaps a national ban being introduced under the incoming administration. So that was exciting.
Well, because there's no the thing with that is there's no it's not a well let's see how that works out. I mean, this is a one and done. You don't get to go back on that.
No, it's not like getting a tattoo that you can get lasered off later, right? Or letting the piercing close up. This will ruin you for life. That if you take cross-sex hormones as a young person, you know, you run the risk, especially if you're a male, of going into osteoporosis by 20, you know, and ruining your skeleton and sterilization. You're right. You can't just reverse this. I mean, if a woman cuts off her breast, you can't just go, they don't just grow back. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is...
Yeah, know, or you have, you know, you have a hysterectomy. Because now you think you want to be a man, and then all of a sudden you become 18, 19. I mean, they're doing this to little girls. You become a kind of a grown-up, I guess, you know, at some point. And you think, well, you meet some nice person, and you think, well, I think I'd like to have kids. Oops. There's no going back on that.
No, there isn't. You know, we weighed on a bill in the California legislature this year, AB 1955, and it was a pretty heinous bill. Our friend Aaron Friday, you know, said, you got to weigh in on this. So I did. And part of the bill you can understand, and part of the bill you're like, what? So the bill was basically punishment by the state of California to these school districts. You know, we've had some school board elections, right? And a lot of America's cultural battleground has moved to the school districts. So in some parts of California, there have been some elections and some school districts that said, hey, you know, we think that if a child is starting to identify as the opposite sex in school, and if they are starting to want to use different pronouns for themselves and maybe even starting to get counseling to go on meds, then we should notify the parents. And so the state was like, oh, hell no, you don't. So they wrote this bill, and the bill basically forbids school districts from notifying the parent if the child is identifying as lesbian, gay, or transgender. Now, when we wrote about this bill and submitted our position was, look, we can understand that in some homes, it might not be really a safe space for a child to admit that they have a different sexual orientation. We understand that. And, you know, the child can keep that to themselves, you know, until they're 18 and then have an adult discussion with their parents. That makes sense to us. But when your child is identifying as transgender and pretending that they are now either a middle gender or the opposite sex or whatever other nonsense got put in their head, that puts the kid on the path to medicalization and surgeries and hormones and irreversible damage. And absolutely, a parent must know. I mean, absolutely, you know, a parent has every right to know that that's the path that their kid is being put on. Well, of course, the bill passed in full form and was signed into law. And, you know, what do you think? It'll take Rob Bonta, what, 5 minutes to bring the first lawsuit against the school district that disobeys, right? So,
yeah.
You know, our state, this is why progressivism, I think, is dying this horrible death, is that we're not learning. We're doubling down, right? Like, we're not taking a pause and going, hey, people don't seem to like this. Maybe we should rethink this. Maybe we should look at that. No, they're doubling down and they're getting very authoritarian. And I think that was part of the stomach turning of this election.
I think so too, because you had parents, you know, especially people who had gotten divorced, and you had that one poor guy in Texas, I think, and the mom is trying to turn his young son into a girl.
Yeah.
And make life changing decisions without the dad. And I know you know more about it than I do, but didn't the court decide that she could do it?
Yes, they did. And you just can't, like, these are like those headlines that you can't unsee them once you've seen them, right? But you're like, can this really be happening? And
yeah.
The answer was, oh, it absolutely is happening. And you think, a Texas of all cases, right? But no, she moved the kid out of state. Right? And so that, and he was trying to stop that because he knew this was exactly what was going to happen. And he's, I think, been even barred from seeing the kid.
It's, yeah, once that kind of thing starts happening, all of a sudden people start looking at, like, oh, wait, that could happen to me. Like, that could happen to, if you're a grandparent, that could happen to your grandchild. And figure that out pretty quick.
Yeah. Very much so, right? I mean, that is so, and, you know, I'm a mom, and there's just nothing you could say to me that would make me march my daughter into any doctor's office to have her breast off. There's just nothing. But my understanding is some of the physicians that are really into this, right, really caught up in it, and the pharmaceutical companies, they pressure the crap out of the parents. You know, and they're like, would you rather have a dead, you know, son or trans or kid, right?
Hey, you know, we have to take a quick break, but when we come back, could you give a couple of stats on that? Because that is always thrown in everyone's face. And, you know, if you don't spend a lot of time dealing with this, or you really don't have anyone in your family, and this is a kind of a tangential issue for you, like, you think, well, gosh, you know, I wouldn't want that to happen. But how likely is that? When we come back with our guest, Sharon Byrne, who is the executive director of WOLF, the Women's Liberation Front, you're going to all find out what TERFs are, by the way. We're going to leave that just as a little cliffhanger for you. If you haven't heard our program before on this sort of topic, you're going to learn about that, too. You'll have a good time, too. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them? Your neighborhood, they take over, but good. They want you all body and soul, then it's just your body, then they go. What shall we do about them?
Make a really good girl. These girls, though, still kind of look like a guy. Never thought to wonder why. If I could pull this off, would I know for certain the real situation behind the curtain? It's so beautiful. Damsel in distress, not exactly natural.
Where the heck Did you find that one?
Some lady named Suzanne Vega sang that song.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Huh.
I picked my favorite part. I've had it in there. I have a whole folder, you'll be happy to know, Sharon. It's just music for shows on transgender issues, by the way.
You picked a good one.
Yeah. So that was I've never heard of Suzanne Vega, Suzanne with a Z. But it was a pretty funny song, As Girls Go. I was like, oh, wow, she kind of hit that nail on the head there. So they do always tell us, oh, if you don't let this six-year-old become a girl or become a boy or whatever, then they're going to, you know, throw themselves off the tallest whatever. Is that happening a lot?
No, and, you know, a little 101 advocacy, progressive advocacy might be useful here, which is whatever issue, you know, one of the old rules of liberalism is that you talk loudly and carry a small victim before you, right? That's how you do
okay.
advocacy. Okay, so, you know, if you're trying very hard to convince the world that kids must be allowed to transition, the best thing you can do is tell everybody that they're going to commit suicide if you don't let them do it. Now, you know, adolescence is always a difficult journey. Nobody has an easy ride of it, right? Everybody's bodies kind of weird them out. The attention that you get as your body develops kind of freaks you out if you're a girl. You're like, whoa, what happened to, you know, I was playing tomboy with these guys like 5 minutes ago, and now all of a sudden they're looking at me weird and giggling, right? Like, it's all very awkward. And, you know, I've raised German Shepherd dogs. German Shepherds go through, like, this adolescence where they're just goofy. You know, their ears are too long, their paws are too big, they can't move correct. You know, like, it takes a minute, right, as you mature into your adult body. So, yeah, the anxiety around this and the absolute drive for social acceptance is paramount when you're a kid. The peer pressure is intense. So I do think that there are some kids that do struggle with this at any rate. And when they're promised this magic exit door, which is, oh, what's different about you is you're born in the wrong body. We just need to fix your body and make it the right body, and we'll just turn you into the opposite sex. By the way, this was the punishment for homosexuality in Iran, right? That, you know, Iran cannot handle that people might be homosexual, so if they discover that you are, they will put you through a series of procedures to turn you into the opposite sex, because that is apparently less abominable to Allah than you being homosexual. So we're taking this very barbaric practice and pitching it to kids. And, of course, you know, NPR will run the story, right, of, oh, my goodness, you know, kids are 72% more likely to commit suicide or attempt suicide after, you know, a transgender surgery ban on kids passes in their state. How did they find that out? Who gave them those stats? That would be the advocates, right, that are pushing for this to be true. So we have not really been able to find good survey data that indicates that every time, you know, we tell you, no, you can't magically become the opposite sex, that you're automatically going to go rush to commit suicide. But we do know that, you know, adolescence is really kind of already fraught with peril, and that adolescence in particular, you know, those under 25, your brains are not finished forming. And what finishes the development process is intense socialization. So the need for social acceptance is incredibly high, right, among young people. Remember, you know, like, they always want to be, you know, socializing with each other. They're sort of biologically driven to it. And so I think that when there's something put in front of them that looks as easy as buying a new pair of shoes, and believe me, you know, the transgender procedures are pitched to them like it's going to be so easy, it's going to be a nothing burger. And, you know, then that's denied to them. They feel like some door has been shut of, this was how I was going to get social acceptance, and now it's been shut. We've also heard from a lot of individuals, particularly the women, who have come out of this craziness. They were taking testosterone. They may have cut their breasts off. And in their early 20s, they realized this is all bollocks, and they've come out of it. And they said that one of the things that happened to them was when they announced that they might be trans, and they were trying on that they might be trans like the way one tries on a pair of earrings, that they got love bombed and told, oh, this is amazing, you're going to be wonderful, and it's going to be great, you're going to love your... In other words, they were, like, promised this stairway to heaven, almost. And so, yeah, these pressures are huge. The marketing is very, very powerful. And, you know, when they do detransition and say, no, that wasn't for me, they get hatred. And
I bet that's just the ugliest. Well, but the other thing, too, is that a lot of... the stats on the transgender community from the suicide standpoint for the people who've actually done it is quite high. I mean, you have a lot.
Yeah.
Not the little kids, but just in general. So I don't know if we've talked to different people, but you know, so there's a couple schools of thought. One is, well, they had, you know, they really should have been under some psychiatric care to start with, and never got that kind of help. And the other one is they just, all the drugs and the surgery and all that stuff just snapped them.
Yeah, there was a story this morning, actually, about a person who killed themselves in 2009. You know, I think they offed themselves in 2015. It was a girl who was born into a family that already had three boys. The mother was profoundly disappointed that this was a girl. She was not a pretty girl. Her brother started sexually abusing her at an early age, and in her teenagerhood, she was like, "That's it. This is a British girl, by the way. She's like, "That's it. I'm going to become a man. This is how I'm going to find my social acceptance." Went through two failed surgeries to create a false penis, right? Two failed. And, you know, was really disheartened by the whole thing, had a lot of health issues, and then finally committed suicide. And so, yeah, these don't lead to happy endings, right? This isn't, again, we're selling you some cosmetic surgery and some hormones and making you think that this is how you're going to change sex. Humans cannot change sex. Never been done. It will never be done. And so it's all a giant fallacy, but the fact that we're selling it to young people, it's criminal. It's criminal.
Yeah, they can't process that. Well, and the other little piece of it too is if you are it was interesting because my 14-year-old granddaughter who lives in Maine made a comment about it over Christmas that she was just so sick of the, I don't know what she called them, but the group of people that all want to be trans or bi or this or that or whatever the thing is. And it was the kids that never got along with anybody anyway. And so now they're demanding special privileges because they are now part of a protected class.
Yeah, now that I think was the greatest trick of all. And again, it's a progressive trick, right? Let's create a new marginalized class of people, vault them over everybody else, make everybody accommodate them. You know, give them extra special, you know, status, declare them, you know, at imminent risk of death, you know, and then, you know, everybody wants to now. Again, the identity politics, I think, was the problem here. That, you know, I remember the diversity training of the late 90s, and it was wonderful. The idea was really good. It was like, you know what? Many heads can often be better than a few heads. You want a diversity of viewpoint so that you don't screw up and make the wrong decision. People could see things that you can't see. And so it's, well, you know, you should welcome some different thought. Okay, that sounds good to me. I'm all about enlightenment. Let's do it. And that quickly morphed into, yes, but you see, I'm half Chinese, half black, and all gay, and you can't possibly understand me. And so the whole, first, the embrace of different ideas quickly became this dividing line where, you know, special groups were extra special, and no one could understand them, but they all needed to be vaulted into high positions. That led to DEI, which has been thoroughly trounced now, right, and pushed back. So one of the things my daughter said to me that was very interesting was she said, you know, we're all being taught that everybody's a hateful white colonizer these days, and the last thing you want to do is be one of those. So here comes this new group that you can just magically identify into, and now you'll be special and protected. And so it's a new identity that is very attractive, and again, very marketed, that somehow you're extra special and different because you're non-binary or, you know, even gay is not good enough now. Being gay and lesbian is not even nearly good enough now. You've got to be one of these myriad genders or furry gender or, you know, you've got to be some pansexual. You've got to be one of these new terms that they come up with, you know, sort of every 5 minutes. Being good old gay is not even good enough now.
It is every 5 minutes because I have somebody who sends me gender of the week every Friday. who I may or may not work with, and I'm like, come on, there can't be this many, and yeah, there really are. But I really, the thing with all of this, okay, it's kind of crazy. It doesn't affect everybody, so you know, you have a lot of people who think, well, I don't care what everybody's doing, let them all go do whatever they want. Which is fine. I mean, I guess I feel like that too. Like, if you want to go do crazy stuff like that, go ahead. But when two things, like, you know, when your kid thinks they're a pirate, and I, somebody says this, who is it? Matt? What's his face? Who's a woman? Matt? You know what I mean? That guy? God, why can't I think of his name? Anyway, and he says, yeah, like, if my kid thinks he's a pirate, I don't go poke his eye out and chop his head, his leg off and give him a crutch, like, and an eye patch. Like, the pirate phase comes and goes. Like, I don't actually make him look like one. And Matt Walsh. And I thought, oh, that's actually an excellent point.
It's a brilliant point. But he's also pointing to what kids will do, and we want them to do.
Yeah.
Play.
Try on different stuff.
Play. Yeah. I mean, when you're young, you know, Carl Jung, the famous psychologist, knew, and so did Freud, that the ego takes a minute to form. And again, in today's terms, we would say that your brain physiology is not finished all of its development until age 25, which is why the military loves to get you when you're 18, because you got no concept of death or maiming. You have zero idea that
yeah.
happens. You just can't believe, you can't comprehend it because your brain's not done forming, right? So what you want young people to do, and we, you know, encourage them to do, and I think we were encouraged to do, you try stuff on. You know, you try this on. You try living in that city. You try this job. You try that degree program. You try things on.
Well, it used to be like, you know, you grew bangs. You know, you cut your hair. Like, you did things that were completely, like, not permanent. Different, what do you call it? Different styles, you know, different clothes and different stuff like that. But this idea that you can permanently change into someone else. And I'm not sure how do these guys, how are they able to really bury the idea that you cannot? I mean, do you think they really believe that you can become a woman, or is this whole pretend thing? They just are demanding we believe it.
That's a very good question.
I mean, we have a chromosomal, like, I mean, it's just basic biology.
Yeah, no, you asked a really good question. And, this, you know, and again, our friend Bialik is really good. You made me think about something. You know, when I was about, I don't know, 14 or 15, I got a little radicalized when I went on a trip to the UK. And, you know, I got a punk haircut, you know, put pink highlights in it, you know, pierce my nose, you know, and wore safety pins, and, you know, did all kinds of grungy stuff that you do when you're, you know, 14 and going to be a punk, right? But, you know, it all grew out, and it turned out all right. You know?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's just stuff you try on,
yeah,
right?
You didn't,
you know,
cut your nose off. You just stabbed something in it temporarily.
Yeah, they closed up, right? You know, and, you know, I wore grungy boots, and, you know, I ran around with anarchy signs and all of that, right? So, like, that's what you do. But, you know, by 16, I was out of that. You know, that was just, it came and went very quickly, right? And that, again, that's what you sort of want to do. So you ask this good question on how's it getting marketed, who's doing the marketing? Okay, who's driving it? Which Bialik has been really good at pointing out and laying the breadcrumbs for us to follow. Is billionaire fetishists that you used to call transvestites. And no, they don't think they're actually women. Actually, they get off sexually on being men with full-on penises dressed in women's clothes. What they want is to do their fetish out in public. And that is what spawned all of this trans ideology. That is what spawned it. And unfortunately, it went terrible directions, particularly, I think, in the direction of the girls. What the girls quickly spied was, wow, womanhood looks really crappy. I'm going to grow up. I'm going to get raped. I'm going to be ran through. I'm going to be only good for sex. And if I'm not married and having babies by 25, I'm past the sell-by date. You know, like, all the stuff coming out of the manosphere is particularly toxic to the young women. They watch one episode of porn, and they realize that, you know, here's what's in store for you, choking an anal pairing. Great. You know, like, some girls are going to be like, I want out of this. And so they don't seek to become men as much as they seek to become theys and get out of whatever womanhood has got on offer.
Isn't that terrible? Because it used to be, you know, you were going to kind of grow up and be June Cleaver, which looked sort of scary, so you figured you could probably get out of wearing the dress every day, but it didn't look terrifying and it didn't look horrible. I'm not sure when we started making being, I thought it was getting better. I don't know, I must have missed that part where being, you know, being a woman looks so horrible that you just wanted to skip it. But I'm really curious too, this whole thing seems to be much more focused on men pretending to be women than women pretending to be men. Dang it, we have to take another break. But when we come back, because the prison thing, and we kind of buried the lead on that for you, we need to go back to that. We don't have men pretending to be, or, you know, women pretending to be men so they can go into the men's side of the prison. Nobody's doing that. It's a very one-sided sort of push that we're into, and I'm curious to know if you're seeing that go away or get worse, I guess. So, the weather forecast on transgender will be happening when we return. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Yes. Been a lot of that going on.
Yes, Johnny Lang wrote a whole song about it. So Sharon, it seems to be really, when you get into the whole transgender deal and the problem parts of it, not the private life. I mean, if you want to mess up your kids or yourself or whatever, I don't think people are looking to necessarily become involved in that, although I think we're going to kind of have to because we're paying for it. But it's mostly men encroaching on women's space. It's not really going the other way, is it?
No, which is where the radical feminists stood up, right? So this is when the conservatives, the radical feminists, started having conversations. Because who didn't notice anything was men. If they noticed something, they were like, you know, it seems to be a lot of characters crowding up under that LGBT umbrella, but I'm not part of that, so I'm not going to pay attention, right? Like, not my shtick. I'm going to stay out of it. Seeing the political is always the personal. But the first one to raise the alarm was lesbians. And, of course, there's a tiny, tiny number of lesbians. There are even fewer lesbians than there are gay men. And so no one was really listening to them. But here's what they were saying. There are men showing up at my dating app. And they are putting on lipstick and looking absolutely bloody hideous. And they're insisting that they're women and that I must date them or it's transphobic. And that I will learn to love girl dick. So you almost feel like a lot of these transvestites got in the back room somewhere and had a conversation with each other and say, we'll just say that trans women are women, and we'll drop the transvestite part.
What is the difference?
Take a new angle.
Right? So it's interesting. You know, we should study this someday for history, because this was the most successful infiltration I have ever seen. In the old Diagnostics and Statistics Manual, you know, that psychologists use. Transvestism and transsexualism were considered mental illnesses. And transsexualism, almost 1,000%, applied to males who wanted to release their inborn female, and some of them went through horrible, botched, terrible surgeries, you know, lots of experimentation to try to do that. But that was what they really wanted. Transvestites are men who enjoy getting dressed up as women. Now, they like their penises, and they aren't actually women, and they know it. But they find sexual gratification, and in fact, they're known to, you know, masturbate while dressed in women's clothes. And very often, they steal their mothers, their sisters, their wives' stuff, so that they can do this. Now, they are been shamed historically, and because they're an affront to masculinity in a lot of ways. It's not that they're women. It's that they're turned on by the idea of themselves being used and penetrated like a woman. That's what it is for them. It's almost a sexual objectification of the self as woman. That's what they're up to. So obviously that is not a sexy, you know, healthy sexual approach to life. It's not going to lead to wonderful, fulfilling relationships. That's why it was considered a mental illness. The last revision.
When did we stop thinking it was a mental illness?
Oh, they've been at this since about the 90s. They've been pushing this pretty hard since about the 90s. And, you know, you mentioned that you thought things were great for women. Yeah, you and I are women of an age that were younger women in the 90s when it truly was great. That was the pinnacle point of achieving rights for women. It really was, like in courts, in employment law, in... It was just amazing. It was growing up,
like we had Title IX, so we had girls' sports. So we got, you know, not too long before we were in school, you didn't have a girls' program. I mean, if you did, it was tennis or something, but you didn't have a basketball program. You didn't have and you didn't have away games because you couldn't get the bus. You didn't have any budget for women's sports, and that ended. And we kind of, hey, like we can finally, because I was an athlete, so that was cool. But now you got to let boys on your team. They kick your rear end all over the court and steal your scholarship.
If you say that you're not okay with this as a female athlete, you're a bigot. You are forced to forfeit your matches. You are kicked off the team. So you're right. What started happening was it started invading at the fringes, and if you weren't around in the fringes, you didn't notice. So if you weren't on lesbian dating apps, you didn't notice, you know, this preponderance of men showing up pretending to be women. And why would it be? Trans
scary sounds.
Trans websites are actually straight. We call them spicy straight, right? They're straight.
I've explained about the spicy straights many times, and Ian, it's really funny because at first people look at you like, what? And then they're like, So, yeah, that's catching on. We're promoting.
Right? Remember, LGB is all about a different sexual orientation. You are same-sex attracted. You are not attracted to the opposite sex, right? So trans, usually if you're a male pretending to be a female, you actually really still like your penis and you like to have sex with women. So you're not going to go date straight women because they're not looking to date a guy dressed up as a girl. You think, you know, your target market is now lesbians. Because you're going to pretend that you're a woman and then sleep with another woman. Of course, lesbians don't actually like any of this. And they're like, no, I really like women. You're misunderstanding it. And that's
Yeah, it's not the dress I was really into. Yeah. It wasn't really the outfit. The outfit wasn't what was working for me.
No. While a lot of us were not looking, the advocates gained the ears of a lot of lawmakers in states and in Congress and started changing the rules. These were not subject to public hearings. We often didn't know about them until after it had happened, right? But Title IX is one of the key ones that you're correct. It gave girls equal opportunity at school and in sports to boys, and that this is a condition of receiving federal funding. The Biden administration rewrote Title IX and published it in April of this year, and it basically had said any boy who wants to play on your team, he's allowed to, and it favored gender ideology or this idea that you could be the opposite sex over actual. So if a girl said, I don't want that guy changing in my locker room with me, and I know he says he's a woman, and that was all that was needed, by the way. They lowered the threshold. No procedures, no medicine. Just say you're a woman. Just say you are. It's good enough that you feel like a woman. And so that's enough. And so any guy, you know, is like, hey, I'm number 400 in the men's sports category, but I could be number one in the girls. Hey, I feel like a woman. And so he goes into the girls' locker room, gets on their sports team, starts kicking their butts in competition. Any girl who protests this is now guilty of sexual discrimination under the Biden administration rewrite. Can you believe that?
That's just insane.
Yeah, and that's not a... And again, back to something that you could control, but the girls can't.
No.
The girls can't control it.
No, and certain coaches... Again, the men were not affected by this. You brought this up earlier. You know, why is it, you know, why are the feminists screaming but not the men? Because the men were not affected by this. It was all the women. You know, it was their spaces that got invaded, their bathrooms. And, of course, in California, we passed the infamous Senate Bill 132. Our favorite friend, Scott Wiener of San Francisco, pushed that one forward. And it was called the Transgender Respect and Recognition Act. And it basically said to any male inmate, oh, not liking it over there in the men's prison? Just say you feel like a woman. Transfer over to the woman. Serve out your term there. And we have had hundreds of prisoners transfer up. Can you believe we did this?
That's crazy.
Well, I think a lot of that is just more of the progressive ideology, and I hope in the next couple of years we start seeing a lot of that being reversed and stopped, because I think public opinion has pretty much had it with the ridiculousness of so much of this, that it's got to reverse. And the same with the women's sports. I mean, I know they're starting to get a little bit more pushback on that. Do you think we're going to see a change there?
I do, because the Biden administration already withdrew their Title IX updates. That was another big thing that happened in December. They published them in April. They got something like 250,000 public comments. So you could imagine 250,000 Americans felt the need to go weigh in on this, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And submit a comment through the public, you know, portal, right? And so we pulled a bunch of those comments and started looking at them, and they were overwhelmingly negative. But how did the Department of Education frame it for the news media? Oh, it's just a couple of grandmas complaining. Everybody else loved it.
Yep. Yeah.
Absolutely not true, right? Like, absolutely not true. And there have been fathers showing up at school board meetings and others saying, man, my girl deserves to compete. What are y'all doing?
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Everybody knows. You know, so, and almost, you almost, as much as I hate to say this as a feminist, you almost sort of do need the men, the reasonable, real, you know, rational men to start showing up going, this is bollocks and you all know it.
Yep.
You know, this is fake and you know it, right? Because, you know, some of the women, unfortunately, are sympathetic to this. You know, especially if they wanted to feel that their child was special in some way. Oh, I have a trans child, you know, whatever. So some of the women are kind of in on this, but a lot of the men are just like, hate this crap, it doesn't affect me. But when it does affect their daughter, you know, or it does affect, you know, their wife going into a bathroom and sees a man in a dress jacking off in there, they do get mad, you know, and they do get involved. Again, no one's really listening to them. We need a coalition of them, right? We really need a coalition of them to step up. But I agree with you. This is where progressive was. It went too far. I think all of us would have passed by the lone transsexual out there or known the weirdo transvestite. I've been like, whatever, you know, do your thing. Just don't hurt anybody, right? But this, by forcing women to bow down and proclaim that men in dresses are a new species of woman, we went too far.
Yeah.
It just went too bloody far, and people couldn't stomach it.
And I think this is going to be a big issue with the Department of Education, too, and I think they're in trouble, and I think them standing behind this behavior, we could just see the downfall of the Department of Education. I think they may decide, you know what, it's not working, and it's not working, not just on this front, but on other fronts. All it does is service the unions, and it doesn't do anything for the kids, and that's what it was for.
Yeah. Well, at some point, you know, especially with the scholarship thing, I had somebody say, well, who cares? We're just such Puritans. Who cares if there are boys in the girls' locker room? And it's like, okay, we're not talking about everybody's just taking a gander over it, you know, the other equipment. In a lot of cases, like the prison issue that I know we're going to talk about next hour, these men are assaulting women. It's giving them access to prey upon them. So it isn't just, you know, Jimmy's a little light in the loafers and wants to wear a dress, so he's going to hang out in the girls' locker room.
No, and you wouldn't be okay
with... Or go in the ladies' bathroom or whatever.
Well, you wouldn't be okay with your daughter's date showing up with no pants on. Why would you be okay with your daughter having to go in the locker room with a man with no pants on? I mean, it's no different. And that's really got to stop.
Yeah, I don't know. People.
That was their goal, though. The goal was to normalize the fetish
and
make women accept it, right? And again, you didn't see this happening. It's unfortunate. There were some, like, NCAA heads and coaches who also saw opportunity here. They're like, ooh, if I put that boy on the girls' team and just let him pass himself off to a girl, I'm going to break every school.
Yeah. See, that's absolutely it. Because, I mean, I competed at the state level in shot put and discus, but I couldn't do that against boys. I mean, I was really strong, but I was, you know, that doesn't work. Oh, my gosh.
No.
We have to run off and listen to some news, and then we're going to come back with our spicy friend. Sharon Byrne from Wolf, the Women's Liberation Front. You can find us at We the People Radio. We hope you'll go in and listen to all our archives. So it's wethepeopleradio.us.